From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 31st day of May, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. The director for the Center for Commercial Agriculture at Purdue University will join us to discuss their brand new ag barometer. It was released publicly for the first time last month, and we'll have another update on Tuesday of next week. We'll hear from Jim Minnert today. A bit later in the program, Daryl Good will be here with his latest thoughts on the marketplace, demand structures, and what it might mean for the price of corn. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. As always, on a Tuesday afternoon with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, right here on the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, good afternoon. Well, I think that, we look around the world is a big thing to look at. The Russian crop keeps getting bigger. We keep hearing about the European crop doing well. And basically, we've got all the spring wheat pretty well planted, and the ratings look good, and we've just got a lot of wheat in the world. Well, we sold off a little bit today, but I'm not going to blame that on wheat. If we've done any driving around over the weekend here, you saw that the crops were a lot taller and a lot greener instead of that yellow color and looking bad. And boy, did we put corn in the ground over here the last 4 to 5 days, corn and beans. And, basically in a 40-mile circle around Newmarket, I think everybody is 100% done. And as you go southeast and farther south from here, well, we've got a few people still trying to finish up some beans. But basically, I think the corn is in the ground, and a lot of it was just planted in the last, it's popped up in 4 or 5 days and looking really good. Well, the guesstimates are 71% to 74%. I'm going to say 71% to 72%, an average sort of rating for this first one out of the box. And it's going to be a little bit hard to go real high because there's a lot of corn that just went in the last week and a half, and we didn't see what it looks. It's hard to tell what's still in the ground or when they would have taken this survey. It wouldn't have looked that good yet. Well, I think, first off, we saw a little profit-taking for end of the month. We've been bull spreading, made some tremendous money on that bean spread that way. So a lot of that 8 cents down in the July and only a penny down in the Noves is that was taking profits. They're banking some money for the end of the month. And I think the weather is looking better as far as for the moment. We have a very good forecast. A lot of stuff in the ground, but the big thing is still going to be to watch the weather coming down. We've got a fairly decent June forecast now that's fairly reliable. It's what comes after that is going to be whether this thing can take off or have feet. Mato Grosso, they come out, they drop the corn yield down there from one of the Brazilian agencies that rate that. So, we are continuing to see that we are competitive in the world. But the CIF corn bids, they were down 2 for June and down a penny for July. So not that much pressure coming on from switching of sales from South America switching to the U.S. That was for corn. Well, I think we're going to pay very much attention. I mean, one of the things that's held beans strong and put a lot of this rally was not knowing what the bean yields in South America were going to be and how much business we could pick up, how soon they'd be out of the market. Last week we talked about quality. They aren't coming in at the generally higher quality that they've sold or the higher protein, but that's not a big deal. They were still producing about 44-45%, I think, was where they were coming in, and that will continue to be sold at a discount. The biggest problem we have is a 30-35% inflation rate in Argentina, and some farmers are holding tight with the idea they don't want to sell their beans, with the idea of the inflation might raise them later, and they don't want to sell without being able to price their inputs at the same time. Thank you, Todd.
In today's agricultural news, the presumptive Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump recently said he supports the renewable fuel standard and ethanol because, quote, renewable energy is one way to make America great again. Emily Skor is the CEO of Growth Energy, and she said, I couldn't be more pleased. Trump announced he would meet with Iowa Governor Terry Branstad to talk about ensuring a strong RFS past 2022. Skor says the fact that both of the leading candidates to be the next president support the RFS is good news for renewable fuel supporters across the country. Well, soybean harvest is progressing in Argentina, but it's still behind. Drier weather has helped the soybean harvest to make progress in Argentina. 72% of the crop was harvested as of last Thursday. That represents an 11-point increase from a week prior, but harvest is still 18% behind last year's pace. The Buenos Aires Grain Exchange notes that the record yields in areas not hit by rain have allowed it to maintain the 56-million-ton forecast, this in spite of losing 1.65 million bean acres. Corn harvest is also progressing, with 29% of the crop in Argentina out of the fields. The exchange also reports that farmers have sown 3% of total land amounts that plan to be put to wheat production for the next year. And finally today, livestock industry leaders tell Congress that federal rules are strangling agriculture and interfering with their efforts to lobby for the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Kansas cattle producer Tracy Bruner of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is angry over USDA's latest bid to reform the GPSA livestock marketing rules and urges Congress to stop it. He testified before the Senate Ag Committee on USDA's new GPSA rule.
We do not need them dictating how we can or cannot market our cattle. We've worked for years to find ways and new and innovative ways to market cattle. Alternative marketing arrangements have been studied by USDA and independent groups, and the results show that these alternative marketing arrangements benefit producers and consumers alike.
But National Pork Producers Council past president Howard Hill went further, linking the fight against new GPSA rules going back to 2010 with the fight for the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal.
Now the agency is moving forward the rule, and we have grave concern it will mirror the 2010 proposal. If it does, the livestock industry would be fundamentally and negatively changed, and the increased exports and jobs created from TPP will be negated. Additionally, the fact that we have to deal with the GPSA rule issue is diverting valuable resources away from the pork industry's top priority, and that being the approval of TPP.
Other groups, including the National Farmers Union and the U.S. Cattlemen's Association, argue the 1921 Packers and Stockyards Act is ancient and needs to be updated to level the field for producers. But all agree there's just too much regulation. Ag Chairman Pat Roberts said it's forcing some to get out of agriculture altogether. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. A month ago, Purdue University made public for the first time its agricultural barometer. It's a survey of agricultural producers and some others to take a look at what they believe the agricultural economy is like across the nation. Jim Mintert is from Purdue University and joins us now to talk about the agricultural barometer. Good afternoon to you, Jim. Thanks for being with us. Tell me about the barometer.
Well, we looked at it as a void in terms of information for the ag sector. There's lots of measures of the economic health of the U.S. economy, but really nothing that tried to look at the ag sector by itself. And so that was really the initial goal. And we wanted to do it in a way where we could monitor it on an ongoing basis. So our report will be coming out once a month. It's based on a survey of about 400 relatively large agricultural producers across a variety of different enterprises and throughout the United States. So it provides a pretty broad measure of the economic health of the sector.
Can you give an idea of what these producers would be in terms of size, whether that's acreage or maybe better in gross income?
Well, the measure of size we used was gross revenue. And so we focused on producers that have a gross revenue of $500,000 or higher. When you focus on that group of producers, you really capture the individuals that really produce the bulk of the nation's food. And so that was the group that we wanted to capture, because we really wanted to get an idea as to what the economic health was across the sector. And then if you start looking at enterprises, the dominant enterprise, the one that's the largest category, is corn and soybean producers. As you might expect, a little over half of the 400 people that we survey each month grow corn and or soybeans. And then the other enterprises are smaller, based on the U.S. Census of Agriculture. So we've correlated it back with the Census of Agriculture to establish our sample and work at it from that perspective.
How long have you been collecting survey data from these folks?
So we started in the fall, and we started back in October, and we used the October through March of this year timeframe to establish a base. And now this was the first public release with the April survey. So when you see one of the survey numbers and the value for the month of April was 106, that 106 relates back to that base period. So the base October through March of 16, the average value across that time frame for the index was 100. So a value above 100, which is what we had in April, suggests that the economic health and sentiment of producers that we surveyed was a little more positive or a little stronger than during the base period. Conversely, if you have an index number that's below 100, that would suggest that the economic health and the sentiment of the producers that we surveyed.
Am I understanding correctly that you will also survey agribusinesses at some point?
So quarterly we survey what we refer to as agricultural thought leaders, and that's a combination of people that are executives and a variety of agribusinesses, ag input suppliers, agricultural lenders, some people from government, some people from academia, people that are officers or leaders in commodity organizations, et cetera. We survey them four times a year and correlate back some of the results that we get out of that survey with some of the information that we're gathering from producers, and presents some interesting contrast and comparisons.
And finally, where can people find the Ag Barometer, and what did the first official one say this month?
Well, all the information about the barometer is available on our website, so we've developed a website for the barometer itself. So that's just purdue.edu/agbarometer will get you there. And this month's value was 106. That was a significant increase compared to the month of March. March, the index, actually from October through March, the index was trailing down as prices and concerns about the ag economy continued to increase as we went across the winter. We saw a rebound in April. We think a lot of that was tied back to the rally that we saw in corn and soybean prices, which really got underway at the beginning of March, but we survey typically in the middle of the month. So if you look at from the middle of March to the middle of April, there was a pretty strong bounce in both corn and soybean prices. We think that probably explains a good bit of the strength in the index that we saw during the month of April. But if you look at it from a longer-term perspective, people are still pretty concerned about the economic health of the sector. In fact, producers, one of the questions we ask is, do you think that during the next 12 months there will be good times financially or bad times? And I think about three-fourths of the producers in the survey suggested that they're expecting bad times over the next 12 months, even with the rebound that we saw in corn and bean prices that took place in late March and April.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Jim Minter is the director for the Center for Commercial Agriculture at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. The Ag Barometer, by the way, is a collective effort of Purdue University and the CME Group. On the first Tuesday of each month, the Ag Economy Barometer provides a sense of the agricultural economy's health with an index value. The index, again, is based on a survey of 400 agricultural producers on economic sentiment each month. Quarterly, the index will be accompanied by an in-depth survey of 100 agriculture and agribusiness thought leaders. The next monthly release, with results from May, will come next Tuesday. Summer's arrived, and so is the critical three-month period in which the nation's food supply will be established. The commodity markets will follow weather conditions, crop ratings, and weather forecast in order to form yield expectations. University of Illinois agricultural economist Earl Good starts each growing season, generally speaking, in the same way. He analyzes the market using a normal growing season condition. This calculation for corn puts the University of Illinois 2016 national average yield at 166.4 bushels to the acre. One of the factors that influences the direction and magnitude of early yield adjustments is the timeliness of planting. Recognizing that yield potential is reduced if planting is delayed beyond the sweet spot for obtaining maximum yields. The timing of that sweet spot varies by region, says Darrell Good, but Illinois has been using May 20 as the national breakpoint for late planted corn since 1986.
We calculate the percent of the crop planted after May 20th for the past 30 years averaged about 18%. This year, the percent of the crop planted after May 20th was 17%. This is very close to the long-term average and suggests that the expectation of a U.S. average yield near trend value should not yet be altered.
A second factor Good monitors in order to adjust his yield expectations is the USDA's weekly crop condition ratings. Those ratings tend to be biased early in the season, with ratings tending to decline as the growing season progresses. Good thinks the early ratings are not always a good forecast of final ratings. Still, the market is interested in the condition of the crop as it compares to ratings in earlier years. Crop condition ratings have been available for the 21st week of the year 17 times out of the last 30 years. This year makes 18 out of 31. On average, 71% of the crop was rated in good or excellent condition for that week, the 21st week, in a range of 43 in 2002 to 79% back in 1994, says Good.
While the market will continue to focus on crop size, it is important to ask how much the price of corn will actually be influenced by the size of the crop. Our recent modeling of the relationship between the marketing year average price and the year-ending stocks-to-use ratio suggests prices tend to be relatively stable over a wide range of stocks-to-use ratios. That is, for a given level of consumption, the size of the crop has a relatively small impact on the marketing year average price of corn, unless the crop is small enough to reduce ending stocks to less than about 10% of use.
Over a wide range of corn supply, the more important determinant of price, writes Daryl Good on the FarmDoc Daily website, is the strength of demand. In this case, demand does not refer to the amount of corn consumed, but instead includes the price users are willing to pay.
Strong demand reflects a willingness to pay a, quote, high price for a given level of consumption, while weak demand reflects a willingness to pay a low price for that consumption. Corn demand has been weak for the past 2 years.
The weather-reduced Brazilian corn harvest has recently provided some demand strength for U.S. corn and a modest price rally. Still, as Daryl Good indicated in his FarmDoc Daily column last week, summer weather could provide additional price strength, at least temporarily. He says stronger demand in the form of more robust economic growth and higher livestock prices would provide for a more permanent price increase. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here with the weather forecast from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Let's talk about the weather post-Memorial Day and the beginning of summer. We're still out a few days from the actual beginning of summer. What can you tell us?
Well, you know, what we're seeing, Todd, is a evolution of an early summer pattern showing up on our weather forecast charts now. We are still, at least here in the short term, not looking at anything too warm. There's nothing hot coming, but we do see a little bit more of a steady temperature regime developing for the Midwest and the Corn Belt, where the ups and downs won't be so up or down. And yes, we'll continue to have chances for some shower and thunderstorm activity, but it's going to be a pattern which it's going to be occasional. Nothing's going to set up shop and last for too long. So I would certainly put the next week to 10 days in the category of pretty much optimum conditions developing as we get into the first 10 days of June.
And what exactly does that mean in the form of temperature and precipitation?
Well, you're looking at temperatures that are going to be riding very close to normal, maybe slightly above normal, and precipitation, shower, and thunderstorm chances coming through about every 3 days or so. Now, amounts are going to vary, but you take these scattered showers and these thunderstorms and you bring them through every 2 or 3 days, odds are they're going to get just about everybody with, you know, probably a half to inch and a half of rainfall, and that would be over the next 7 to 10 days.
Any trouble spots this early in the season that we need to worry about any place across the planet or in the nation?
Well, certainly Texas. The Southern Plains has seen just a tremendous amount of flooding and severe weather. This is something that we've been concerned about since the advent of the strong El Nino that developed late last year and is now reverting to an La Nina, but we're still seeing those El Nino impacts. Those areas will continue to be very wet in the Southern Plains here through the next 5 days, but then they'll start to see a bit of a break developing and dry out a bit as well.
Thanks so much for doing the job. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Thank you.